Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. It's the people versus the EU, but first, the police versus the people, as sheriffs want popular police tracking Waze app disabled. James, this is from the Associated Press. Sheriffs are campaigning to pressure Google to turn off a feature on its Waze, that's W-A-Z-E, traffic app that warns drivers when police are nearby. They say one of the technology industry's most popular mobile apps could put officers' lives in danger from would-be police killers who can find where their targets are parked. Waze, which Google purchased for $966 million in 2013, is a combo of GPS navigation and social networking. 50 million users in 200 countries turn to the free service for real-time traffic guidance and warnings about congestion, accidents, speed traps, traffic cameras, construction zones, potholes, unsafe weather conditions, you name it. To Sergio Kopalev, a reserve deputy in Southern California, Waze is also a stalking app for law enforcement. There are no known connections between any attack on police and Waze, but law enforcers are concerned it's only a matter of time. They're seeking support among other law enforcement trade groups to pressure Google to disable the police reporting function. Now, a Waze spokesperson, Julie Mosler, said the company thinks deeply about safety and security. She said Waze works with the NYPD and others around the world by sharing information. Google declined to comment. Mosler said these relationships keep citizens safe, promote faster emergency response, and help alleviate traffic congestion. Google, it should be noted, has a complicated relationship with the government and law enforcement, to say the least. And James, in an odd little bit of sync, Sheriff Mike Brown of Bedford County, Virginia, said the police reporting feature, which he called the police stalker, presents a danger to law enforcement. Meanwhile, Nuala O'Connor, head of the Center for Democracy and Technology, a Washington, D.C. civil liberties group, said it would not be appropriate for Google to disable the police reporting feature. Quote, "I do not think it's legitimate to ask a person-to-person communication to cease simply because it reports on publicly visible law enforcement," end quote. She went on to note that a bigger concern among privacy advocates is how much information about customers Waze shares with law enforcement, since the service necessarily monitors their location continually as long as it's turned on. Now, we can't say whether or not she dropped the microphone after that, James, but some of this is coming from the case of Ismael Brinsley, where he allegedly shot and killed two NYPD officers last month. However, also last month, we reported for you right here on New World Next Week in our segment, FBI Report Exposes Police State Paranoia, that the fear factor coming from the cops is vastly overblown. James.
Interesting story, isn't it? And you use the term something like a stalking tool for law enforcement, but although they mean that in the opposite way, of course, yeah, you're talking about it can be the other way as well, as Waze can share this information with law enforcement about the people. So yes, it's almost as if this type of geolocation information can be used by bad people for nefarious purposes, but the government tracks all of this geolocation information, and they tell us not to worry because they're the good guys, even though even within their phony framework of privacy laws, they've admittedly broken those laws thousands of times a year, according to recently released documents. So, it's almost like if you give bad people this type of information, they can use it in bad ways. Well, guess what? Here we are, we're in this matrix, this web, and we have the ability to communicate with each other. So how are they going to crack down on people sharing publicly available information that people see with their own eyes and then report on this app? What kind of law can you pass to stop that type of information transition from taking place? It's mind-boggling to think about how they would even try to crack down on this. And it's ridiculous that they would even try to do so. Because again, yes, information, guess what? It can be used for good purposes or bad purposes. And the point is that if they can use it against us, then we should be able to use it against them. However, as you say, we have to be careful about who these apps are and what kind of information they share. Waze bought by Google for nearly $1 billion. A newsflash, big government-connected agencies like Google, I mean, it's basically an extension of government at this point, don't buy apps for $1 billion for no reason. They do it because they can harvest all sorts of data about you. So it goes both ways. And when you get into the web eats you. And on that note, I guess we should throw in a link to a recent Medium.com Google.com story about Google and its relationship with the government and CIA. Very in-depth reporting on that subject that we've talked about many times, but it definitely deserves detailing in as much detail as possible so that people know that, you know, when you use these services, you are stepping into the maw of the beast. So guess what, law enforcement? You open up that Pandora's box and it's going to be used against you.
And I have to say, we've actually on a couple of road trips used the Waze app. When you're sort of when your navigation partner in the passenger side, they're able to track and look at a lot of this different stuff, and it almost makes it kind of fun. It is a fun app to actually use when you need it when you're in a different place in the country. And James, again, all this flies in the face of what we were kind of referring to, that FBI report that shows, as we've known statistically, crime is down, 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 down. But the police, and more importantly, the police state, act as though they're attacked and killed and murdered at every turning corner. So I add in two relateds to this, James, before we move to our second story this week on New World Next Week, number 218, if you're keeping score at home. A lot of this threataganda, fear-mongering, call it what you want, is coming post-Paris attacks. And we want to kind of give some of those updates to sort of show again how this sort of story and this narrative, James, as you and I have kind of referred to it, keeps going on. So 2 weeks after Mark Zuckerberg said, "Je suis Charlie," Facebook is now censoring images of Mohammed. Again, just like we saw France arresting people for using free speech while they're championing free speech. And the other news, James, Canada joins the rest of the world powers in spying on smartphone and download data. So big, flashy, eye-catching events are able to ratchet up the controls, but we find that they hardly ever are eliminated once the danger subsides. And in a way, I think that kind of takes us into our second story this week, James. As the radical leftist anti-bailout Syriza party has won in Greece's national elections. So The Guardian noted 10 years ago, Syriza just got 4% of the vote in Greek elections. This week, the party took control under the charismatic leadership of Alexis Tsipras. Meanwhile, the BBC reports Syriza, the left-wing party that stormed to power in Greece with 36% of the vote, has promised to ditch austerity and renegotiate the country's 240 billion euro, that's 270 billion US dollars, the bailout with the EU and the IMF. But what exactly have the Greeks signed up to, backing a party that was once a wide-ranging far-left coalition that included Maoists? BBC notes five of Syriza's key aims: actions on jobs and wages, power to the people, meaning literally electricity for people, debt write-off, scrapping of the property tax, and closer relations with Russia. So Syriza may have dropped their early aspirations to ditch NATO and force the U.S. Navy out of Crete. They've dumped those ideas. However, Greece's military cooperation with Israel may well be under threat. James, I've got two questions for you. One, what do we really know about these guys and Alexis Tsipras?
Well, on that front, I mean, we can look at some of the track record that you're laying out there, but I think probably more to the point is exactly what you mentioned towards the end of that, which is they've already started to renege on some of their more radical promises, like getting out of NATO and things of that nature, that would truly, fundamentally shake up the system. So they're already backing off on that. What are they going to back off on next? And I think the proof is going to be in the pudding rather than in the track record, because as everyone knows, when you're in opposition, you can say whatever you want. But once you actually get into power, you start making deals with the devil, as is evidenced by this interesting quote from a dailytimes.com.pk article saying that the mood towards Greece was changing since his left-wing party's sweeping election victory on Sunday. Tsipras said he would avoid antagonism with European Union and International Monetary Fund creditors. "Our priority is also a new negotiation with our partners, seeking to reach a fair, viable, and mutually beneficial solution so that the country exits the vicious circle of excessive debt and recession," he said. AKA, good luck, Greek voters. I think you're going to learn an interesting lesson through this, which is that people can come into power promising to be your political savior, and they never will be. You're not going to find the answer through the ballot box, but this is a good learning experience, and I hope the Greek people will learn something from this. Either way, I think the EU is going down in a blaze of glory, which is a good thing, but it depends how it goes down and what they bring in as the emergency backstop measure. And again, I'm thinking the proof is going to be in the pudding with this. So what's your second question, James?
The second question, I wonder if this is comparable in any way, what we saw and what we reported on here in August of 2012 when we said Iceland was right. Is this a kind of good pushback from the people against austerity measures?
I think that probably the spirit behind it is good, and I think that a lot of the voters are probably thinking in the right way, but again, leaving it up in the hands of a political party that comes into power promising the moon and delivering nothing is not the way to go about this. So, yes, the idea should really be repudiation of the debt that was really, I mean, just created by these gangsters in collusion with Goldman Sachs as part of a grand plan to get the Greece into the EU in the first place that fell apart spectacularly and is now plunging the Greek economy. So, again, that's not going to happen by this, let's negotiate with our partners' happiness and, oh, well, we didn't really mean we're going to get out of NATO and all the other backing off that they are bound to do as a result of all of this. Again, the answer is not going to come from this political party. But again, I think it is, the spirit is right. I think the people have the right idea. Now they just have to start implementing that beyond the political process that's going on right now. And as I say, either way, I think this is going to end in kind of a blaze of glory. Economically speaking, we already see the Greek 10-year bond yields have gone up 50 basis points since Syriza took power. And we've seen the main Athens stock index drop 4%. Clearly, either way, the vulture capitalists who want to profit and eat off the corpse of Greece are not going to let this work, even if this was meant to be a good thing. And then the other side of this is now they're running to China, they're running to Russia, trying to, you know, strengthen diplomatic relations, which I think, again, just plays into the bigger global government framework of, you know, we're against the bad Western globalists, we're in bed with the nice Eastern globalists, yay, you know. And I think, ultimately, again, this is just part of a much, much bigger game that maybe they're honest dupes in, but I still think that makes them dupes.
And they're making great cosmetic moves. We'll also include a pretty recent article on Zero Hedge. The barricades are down. They note Syriza already rolling back austerity reforms, and they've literally physically removed the barricades from in front of the Greek parliament that have been there for almost probably 4+ years now. So again, at least cosmetically and visually, you'd look at it and go, oh, we've opened up. Your government is now turned back over to you. So, James, our third and final story this week, I think, can still be filed under our ongoing effort to bring you some type of good news next week on these New World Next Week episodes. Fatal peanut allergies could be history. This via The Telegraph, a strain of probiotic bacteria could offer a cure for potentially fatal peanut allergies, according to scientists in Australia. The breakthrough followed a trial in which a group of kids were given increasing amounts of peanut flour along with a probiotic called Lactobacillus rhamnosus over an 18-month period. About 80% of the kids who had peanut allergies were subsequently able to tolerate peanuts. Mimi Tang, the lead researcher, said the families involved believed the treatments had changed their lives. These findings provide the first vital step towards developing a cure for peanut allergy and possibly for all food allergies, she told the Melbourne Herald Sun, and perhaps a bit of hyperbole. The randomized trial involving a group of about 30 kids was conducted by the Murdoch Children's Research Institute in Melbourne. And as soon as I heard that name, I wondered, and of course, yes, it is connected to Mr. Rupert Murdoch. It's run by his mom's hospital there in Australia. The children aged 1 to 10 were given, as we noted, small amounts of peanut flour, and they kind of raised it up more and more and more. Along with that, the dose of Lactobacillus rhamnosus, which is found in yogurt, but was given in quantities equivalent to the amount found in 44 pounds of yogurt. Rates of peanut allergies, James, have dramatically increased in the past 2 decades, particularly in developed countries, and for most folks, the condition is lifelong. So my other question to you, James, did you know anybody with a peanut allergy when you were in school?
I really, not when I was growing up, but I do now. So yes, I mean, that's the point. It has really blossomed, bloomed, whatever you want to say, grown like a cancer on society. And the question is why in the last couple of decades?
That is the question. And I guess for me, that's why, you know, you might file this under maybe a not unmitigated good news story, because, again, maybe doesn't get at the heart of why are these things happening?
Yeah.
Why the changes of the products and the chemicals and the things that we've been using over these last couple of decades? Why are they causing these things, rather than just go, oh, well, we found this magic pill and you'll just take this thing to deal with this other problem that's caused by some other source that we don't really look at. So yeah. It's an interesting area. And again, I never knew anybody with a peanut allergy when I was in school. It seemed like something I only saw on TV, you know, later in you know, building up in the 90s, I guess.
Yeah. Well, whatever the case may be, for the people who suffer from this, this would be obviously a huge breakthrough. So let's hope that it is at least true that there is this, if not cure, at least maybe it can work on 80% of cases or so. Let's hope so, because honestly, this is a horrific and debilitating condition for people who have it. So hopefully some progress can be made with this. But again, let's temper this, because a lot of reporting on these types of things gets blown out of proportion to what the studies actually indicate and where they are in their progress. And I was just looking at the headlines reporting this story. It was interesting to see the range of ways in which the headlines were phrased, from the tabloid press, peanut allergies cured for good, to the more subdued press saying, well, you know, a trial indicates 80% of people might be able to get away from their symptoms. So, I mean, again, let's take this with a huge grain of salt. And on that note, I'll throw in a link to the very humorous, actually humorous and sobering article from FastCompany.com, why a fake article titled Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs was accepted by 17 medical journals. And the first line of this article, in an intention dependent on questions on elsewhere, we betrayed possible jointure in throwing cocoa. They literally threw this into a word randomizer, and it was accepted by 17 medical journals. Let's put a bit of healthy skepticism into this process in general, and I'll believe it when I see it.
So there's one more that we'll file under good news next week. There's an incredible edible park that feeds allegedly hundreds of thousands. I've just kind of learned about this, and I've been checking it out. It's the Incredible Edible Farm in Irvine, California, James. And again, I think that's really kind of the wave of the future in a lot of these ways that we talk about the decentralization. And can you imagine if there was a massive, incredible edible farm in every town and city that could feed thousands, if not hundreds of thousands? So I would just note, James, there are a ton of other stories going on and kind of heating up in the media and in the alternative media. The vaccine wars, the death of the Saudi king, and drunk spook drones crashing on the White House. And you can follow all those stories and more, or submit your own story using hashtag New World Next Week on Twitter. And that's how we get a lot of these great stories, James.
Speaking of the death of the Saudi king and the future of oil geopolitics, that's exactly what I'm writing on for the International Forecaster this weekend. So, of course, you can subscribe to the Forecaster or to CorbettReport.com for that. James, as always, wonderful job rounding up these stories. Thank you. And looking forward to it next week.
Thanks, man. Take care.